Thank you for downloading this edition of Forethought from the BBC. Danny Dorling tells a live audience at Summer Hall in Edinburgh why he thinks population growth over the next century is nothing to be scared of. The presenter is Alex Krotowski.
Welcome to Forethought, Radio 4's series of talks exploring compelling ideas in the modern world. This talk is being recorded in front of a live audience during the Edinburgh Festival at Summer Hall. Our speaker tonight is Professor of Geography at Sheffield University, Danny Dorling. You might think that our numbers on this planet are continuing inexorably to increase, but Professor Dorling believes that the population bomb has already diffused. But don't fret, there is still plenty to worry about. Here to discuss population growth and who will be in an increasingly crowded world, Professor Danny Dorling.
Population growth sounds like such an abstract thing. The number of human beings in the world will grow to a certain number, to peak at around 10 or 11 billion people, UN experts say. But what will living on a planet of 10 billion people feel like for individuals? We won't know what the future holds till we get there, but we can speculate. We can speculate that more people might mean more consumption. We can look at our recent past and see particular trends which, if rolled forward, would not be sustainable. I grew up in a city which was becoming more crowded. I didn't know it was becoming crowded at the time. To me, it was just normal. But in the year of my birth, a book was published predicting doom. It was titled The Population Bomb, and it was written by Paul and Anne Ehrlich. It suggested that if people carried on having children at the rates they were, we would soon run out of space and face mass starvation by the 1970s and 80s. I knew about a lack of space in the 1970s. I shared a bedroom. Then, when I was six, we moved house. No more bunk beds for me. I got my own bedroom. I got a new neighbourhood near the Green Road roundabout on Oxford Ring Road. It separated four estates, each built at a different time as the population of Oxford expanded. The children of those four neighbourhoods were separated by the dual carriageways that joined at the roundabout. To go between them, you did best use the subway. Back then it was entered by steep sloping ramps, was damp, long and usually dark. The walls were covered in graffiti, and among the names of children I knew were nastier slogans. Slogans aimed at immigrants. Most importantly, the subway was curved. You couldn't see who was inside when you were going down into it, and once inside, you couldn't see who was around the corner. It mattered who you bumped into, depending on where you were entering and exiting, on how old you were, how small you were, whether you were a boy or a girl, black or white. If you got a kicking at age 12 because you came in from the wrong entrance, you quickly learnt that place matters and that people could be scared of strangers. You also learnt that exploring was exciting. The city I grew up in had been growing in population long before I added to its numbers. Before I was born, new estates had been built on its edges and people tipped out of the centre. More people were encroaching and the city was changing, becoming younger, less white and a bit more posh. People from other places were coming in. The city, like our planet, was becoming more crowded. We all know there are more and more people sharing this planet than ever before. We hear it in news stories every week. And I'm interested in the stories that we tell about each other and about population and how our perceptions are affected by what we say. Human beings progress by telling stories. Our history, knowledge and understanding are all the collections of the few stories that survive the telling. This includes the stories we tell each other about the future. How the future will turn out depends partly on which stories we collectively choose to believe. This fear about population growth is a story which has been around for a long time. In the early 19th century, Thomas Malthus's essay on the principle of population became a bestseller. It tapped into uncertainty over Europe's expanding future, an uncertainty that gripped his times. The population bomber of his day, Malthus, argued that population growth, if unchecked, would lead to mass starvation. The world's population is growing, from only a billion in 1820 to 3 billion in 1960 to 6 billion around the turn of the millennium to over 7 billion today. But with the benefit of hindsight, we can now see more clearly when and how this growth began to spread, and we can also see that the growth is finally slowing. Within 3 years of the publication of Ehrlich's population bomb, worldwide fertility began to fall rapidly. It turned out that the book had been written at the peak moment of human growth. Could we, and were we foolish enough to resurrect him, Thomas Malthus might be less shocked at finding himself reborn than at finding himself alongside so many other living people, and in particular, so many living so well. He will be most shocked to know that we are currently having so few children, especially if he knew this was out of choice. It won't be until at least 2040 that we're number 9 billion. And if we ever make it to 11, that'll be a century from now, maybe centuries, though I think probably never. There are wide error bands around population projections, and in recent decades, they have more often been overestimated for future population growth than underestimated it. I believe that global population will peak at or before 10 billion. So what will life be like living alongside this number of people? How's that going to feel? I think that as population growth continues to slow, and as we learn more and more of people in other places and mix more around the world through the internet and travel, we'll come to see ourselves as part of a larger whole. Just as more people more often now think of themselves as English or Scottish, rather than from one town, and far more have a sense of self as European than their parents ever had. If we cast an eye back over the last century in Britain, many of our great-grandparents never ventured far from their county of birth. They went to the county town on market day. Most of our grandparents got to go further afield, maybe a day trip to a big city. Our parents had holidays in other parts of the UK or over in the continental mainland. We grew up in a more multicultural society, and our children might well settle abroad as and when work opportunities arise. We should bear in mind that a shift to around 10 billion is not as great a change as what most people in the world have already experienced. We, along with our parents, have experienced more of a change in terms of growth than what our children and their children will experience in the future. From here to 10 billion is only a rise of 40%, whereas our parents experienced numbers which doubled or even tripled in some areas. As our total numbers creep towards 9, 10 or 11 billion, areas where population decline, as usual, will become more common. We are not used to that. In percentage terms, population growth has been slowing since shortly after I was born. Many reasons are suggested to explain this. Greater access to contraception, better education, and underlying both, greater female emancipation. As a species, since 1971, we have individually been having fewer children, but because we are also living much longer, our total numbers are still, temporarily, rising. These trends turn around slowly. Like a juggernaut moving forward, it is long after the brakes are applied that the vehicle stops moving. By 2100, the reverse gear may well have been applied, and that's when we'll see most populations being in decline. Malthus and the authors of the population bomb were concerned that growth would outstrip our resources. In their imaginations, population growth has meant, at various times, civil war, famine, and pestilence. That anxiety still persists, but as we move forward, it is possible that less marginal land will be farmed, but less food wasted as well, and meat eaten less often. So what might future populations be like? We could speculate on the way societies are evolving across the world. We are ageing as a population. Large numbers of us growing very old at the same time is a new experience for human beings. Our families will both be smaller and narrower, with more generations alive at any one time. We may rely more on friends than siblings, and more of us may be single for longer. We are becoming a more urban animal, which will continue in the future. Giant cities will grow upwards and will increasingly move to live in caves in the sky. However, children in the future will first still explore what is nearest to them. We will experience infancy in exactly the same way as we do now. And when we're young, we'll explore our surroundings just as we do now. The majority of people don't think about population declining in the future. Most have not yet experienced it near where they live. What kind of issues could this throw up? How will we, as a society, adapt to less? Some of what I imagine is based on what I know, but parts will be echoes of my own experiences as I've moved from city to city over the years. When I was 18, I went to live in Newcastle-upon-Tyne. It was more densely populated than home, but I can still remember what it was like to live much nearer areas that were emptying of people. I stayed there 10 years during a time when that city was losing population, as people left in search of work elsewhere. Is this what we'll see more of in the future? We are living through a mini baby boom now, in the UK and worldwide, but not in the rest of Europe. And it is much smaller than any past booms. That tells us we're changing. When we imagine stories of the future, we picture highly advanced forms of technology doing more and more for us. But what will be most different is the way we treat each other. When Europe expanded in population, a series of myths of European superiority accompanied that expansion. The myths of European superiority should diminish as Europe becomes the first continent to shrink in population size. 50 years ago, in August 1963, Martin Luther King spoke of his dream that his four little children would one day live in a nation where they would not be judged by the colour of their skin, but by the content of their character. Today they'll still be judged by the colour, but not as much, and it is rarer to have four children in every continent of the world. A century on from 1963, and who can guess what our worst prejudices globally will be? We'll be more packed together, but we'll have mixed more, and all our children will may be considered more precious as they dwindle in number. All our children, because few of us will always have children of our own. All of us will be relying more and more on what we can collectively achieve, not on how our family can look after us. Believing in no such thing as society becomes precarious as families shrink in size. I believe it matters how we talk about the future and how we perceive it. If we talk about each other as if we were the greatest threat to each other, then we can become the greatest threat. If instead we see that we are becoming more crowded, but that the increasing crowding is slowing down, then we need not fear other people as much as we do today. In a few days' time, I move again, back to Oxford where I started off. I wonder what my children will make of a city that to me appears much more crowded, but to them will appear normal, and which will shape what they become. I don't like to think of my children as a product of their geography, but we're all partly the outcome of the times we've lived through, the places we've been, and the people we've shared our space and time with, and the stories they tell us. What then happens to us, and our sense of self, is always partly a product of how our numbers are changing. We are leaving the era of the population explosion, an era that began just as Europeans were bursting out of Europe in the middle of the 19th century. That leaving and the coming stability should change what it means to be human. We find it hard to imagine a new future because we are not yet those new people. We are products of the end of the population explosion. As I said, I was born in 1968, in the year of the population bomb. The bomb was diffused. Our stories have yet to catch up with that reality. Thank you.
Thank you very much for that, Danny. I thought that was very provocative because, again, the story that you're telling is a story that's quite different from those that we hear in so many different spaces. I have a couple of questions. Well, one question that I will condense in, or two questions that I will condense into one before I let anybody else speak. You mentioned the stories that that we tell to one another about these types of issues and how you're moving back to the place that you started. What stories will you tell your children, and what stories will we tell one another about the silences that we have grown to know as people in a non-exploding population?
I'll probably bore my children about what the place was like. I grew up in the 1960s, or at least the 70s, when I can first remember. Back then, rural Oxfordshire was poor, and empty. There were people who didn't have electricity in the countryside. And they'll stop listening at that point. But the change is so fast. That's what we find hard to understand. We've lived through this population explosion and a technological explosion. It's slowing down. We are having fewer children worldwide, 3 on average per family worldwide now. They're going to have 2, and it's stopping. But because this has been so fast, we have this sense that it's just going to carry on growing as it is, and we can see it isn't, and we need to get ready for that.
I'd like to reach out to the audience. There's somebody at the back there. Please don't forget to wait until the lovely Vic hands you the microphone, or at least points it at you.
I believe to survive as a human, you need 2 things. You basically need resources for energy, for electricity and things like that, and you need food. I think as science develops, which, as you said, education, we're getting better at, we're basically sort of pointing everyone that way. Do you not think that as NGOs develop with crops and things like that and resources get better, like fracking, do you not think it will be more economically viable for people to have more kids? Because at the moment, it's obviously not.
Or could it become more economically viable?
Yeah, could it become?
At the moment, the people who have the most kids in the world are some of the poorest people. The people who have the least children in the world are some of the richest people on average. So middle-class Americans have the same number of children as people in China with a one-child policy preventing them. I think that as it's become possible to reduce the number of children we have, and as women have increasingly been allowed to take part in that choice, very few women decide they want to go past a second pregnancy and experience in childbirth. But I'll say no more of that. I'd happily leave it to the women to explain why.
And then we have time for one more question here. The lady in the pink scarf at the tail end of the row.
It was just that you mentioned before how when you move back to Oxford, I think you said, with your children, it might seem as a shock to you how much bigger the population would be, and to them it would seem normal. And you also described earlier on that you were once in that position. How do you think that has changed you? And because you asked how that might change them.
Yes. I think one way of trying to understand this change and trying to cope with it for ourselves is to think, as you get older, I'm having to admit I'm now getting older, you look back and you go, oh, London wasn't like this in the past, or the city I grew up in wasn't like this in the past. But if you can remember what it felt like when you were young, it was just normal. It was normal to live like it was in that particular place. Although for my parents, it was also changing rapidly. And that helps you get a sense that what is occurring, this change, isn't terrible. For younger people in particular, it's normal. And then we can cope with change if we can cope with that. And sirens.
Sirens!
But there's lots we're going to have to learn. I mean, sirens are a great example. We are going to have to learn as we, you know, over half of us in the world live in cities, 80, 90% in Britain. We're going to have to learn to turn the sirens down and off at night. And also that chasing cars very fast, you know, even though they might be doing good, can actually hit people on the way to saving somebody else. We're learning to be urban. It's so recent we haven't learned how to do it yet, which is why we have people driving around with sirens on in our cities.
Wonderfully done. That means that we can keep those sirens in. Thank you very much, Professor Danny Dorling.
The speaker in Forethought was Danny Dorling. The presenter was Alex Krotowski, and the producer was Caitlin Smith. There are many more BBC programmes to download for free via bbc.co.uk/radio4.